Today's episode is presented by Clark's. Clark's story began almost 200 years ago when Cyrus and James Clark made a slipper from sheepskin. At the time, it was a groundbreaking invention, a combination of invention and craftsmanship that has remained at the heart of what Clark's does now. You are a Clark's boots guy, Javier.
Yeah, I own the snow boots. I got them a couple years back when I really needed snow boots because I was going to ship myself off to college in Western Massachusetts where it snows pretty heavily, I would say. So yeah, I really like them. They have a zipper instead of laces. I don't know if all Clark's boots do or don't, but my specific pair does, and it's very convenient because honestly, like, level with yourself here, people. Does anybody actually like laces on their snow boots?
Nobody likes laces in general. They're a hassle.
Yeah, but specifically snow boots, where they're like so bulky and heavy, and it's like, come on. Yeah,
I'm gonna tie these? No, zip them up.
Yeah, zip them up. Get yourself some Clarks. They're very comfortable. They keep your feet warm. You never have to worry about them.
Yes, especially in the cold winter months of, you know, Western Massachusetts, like you said, or up here in Canada. Definitely you need to get a good pair of winter boots. We're teaming up with Clark's and Podgo to bring you up to 30% off on selected items, including on the iconic Clark's Desert Boot, by going to podgo.co/Clark's. That's podgo.co/CLARKS. Welcome to Crossbody of Work. My name is Evan.
I am Javier.
And we're looking at Robert Van Damelton. That's right. Alexander Damelton. Rob Van Dam today.
How long were you preparing this?
I didn't know I was going to say that until right now. So.
Okay, but you have been going ham with the different variations of Rob Van Dam, even pre-show.
That's true.
You were going very, very in on the variations of Rob Van Dam's name, and it's starting to get a little bit concerning on my end here.
Yeah, I think it's because recently my friend and I were just texting each other back and forth different things to say instead of pandemic. Like, you know, I can't believe we're doing this in a panoramic.
I just say panty raid.
Yeah. We didn't even get that one. It was like Panasonic, pantomime. All those. So I'm just in that mindset of just continuing to riff. So
you just put that note in the back of your head. You're going to tell your friend after this, aren't you?
Yep. You've infected the podcast. You've come into my place of work.
Anyways, speaking of shenanigans, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania is a place that sucks, but it gave us Robert Van Damington.
I didn't know you were going to just come for Philadelphia off the... I know you've mentioned how much you don't like Philadelphia on the podcast before.
What
is your issue with Philadelphia?
They suck. They have the worst sports fans out there. It's not even close, in my opinion. All of the major professional sports. It's not even just like a basketball or a football or anything. I'm not saying this because I don't like the 76ers either. I just hate Philly fans. They suck. They're the worst. They're just terrible.
I feel like I've asked you this before, but have you heard Bill Burr's rant about the city of Philadelphia?
I haven't, but it doesn't surprise me seeing as he is a Massachusetts guy.
He goes off because it was a comedy festival and they were just booing and heckling every comedian. So instead he just goes off randomly, and for the 20 minutes that he's out there, he just makes fun of their idols. Like, the biggest idol that the whole city has is a fictional boxer who couldn't win. Like,
yeah,
that's bad. I don't want to pile on Philadelphia because I've never been, so I have no real opinion of Philadelphia, but I did
and
hate the Flyers
steaks,
growing up.
Like, look, right, I'm a guy who likes steak and cheese. Why the fuck are you putting mocha cheese on that bitch? The fuck is wrong with you? Just do it normal. Just make it normal.
We are off to a hot start. Yes, Rob Van Dam did come from ECW, but we'll get into the background of Rob Van Dam in just a minute. First, housekeeping notes. Follow us on social media, at Crossbody of Work, on the Twitter and the Instagram. Also, rate us on whatever you're listening to. You know, 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app, that'd be cool. Follow
us
on Spotify.
In honor of RBD,
cool.
Give us a 5-star frog splash.
Exactly. Give us that five-star frog splash. Of course, the merch table is open, fullpressshop.com. And as we are on the road to WrestleMania, trademark, check out all of your wrestling news and recap needs at fullpresswrestling.com. If you're interested in joining the crew and writing for us, like Javier and I, then you should fill out the form on the site. We recently did an NXT TakeOver Dream Draft, which was super fun. You know, we're always trying to come up with some new ideas for content. So join us.
Yeah, Javier won that one as well.
I don't think he did. I think it was pretty good, considering I took two of the matches you desperately wanted.
Okay, you took one.
I took two.
And then you robbed me of my last one. The last one was more of just a fun thing for me.
That's true.
But if you guys want to know what it is, you're going to have to look up the article, because I'm not going to spoil that for you here.
It's a good time. Rob Van Dam, born in Battle Creek, Michigan. I remember it was one of the only places that I had actually been where a wrestler was born, because it's on the route between where I would travel through Michigan growing up. And I was like, oh, Rob Van Dam. I would remember that very vividly. But his name does come from his resemblance to Jean-Claude Van Damme, because if you've ever seen the two of them, especially young RVD next to Jean-Claude Van Damme, the actor, they look pretty the same.
Yeah, they definitely don't look the same now. I can tell you that one.
Nope. So Rob Van Damme was an enhancement talent in WCW for a little bit under the name Robbie V, and then in ECW starting in 1996. He was a babyface at first and then turned heel during a feud with Sabu, ended up teaming with Sabu, won the tag titles twice, turned back face in 98, and won the television title on April 4th, 1998 from Bam Bam Bigelow, and would then go on to a 700-day reign that only ended due to injury, a broken ankle, in early 2000. One of the most legendary title reigns in all of I'd say 90s wrestling. Like, it was the one that defined ECW.
Yeah, I mean, whenever I think of ECW, I really don't think of the top title. Like, I don't think of guys like Mike Awesome or Just Incredible, you know, the big world champions. I think of the people, you know, who really established themselves, you know, as kind of these legendary figures of ECW, like a RVD for his legendary reign with you could say mid-card title, or like Tommy Dreamer. Tommy Dreamer never won the big one, right?
Not in ECW proper, no.
Yes, but Tommy Dreamer is like one of the first people you think of when you think of ECW, just because of, you know, again, that legendary status that he really was able to garner, because he was so over with the crowd. So you really think about the guys who got over, and it kind of felt like none of them were ever like top guys. Like, you, it's not like a Cena, Roman Reigns, whatever type situation. It's one of those, you know, if a Daniel Bryan gets hot, yeah, Daniel Bryan's now an ECW like or Daniel Bryan like guy. He's like the top guy that people care about, and they just go with it.
Yeah, they were really good at riding the hot hand. You know, if the Dudley Boys became hot, you build around the Dudley Boys. You know, Lance Storm and Just Incredible become popular as the Impact players. Build around them. RVD is killing it in terms of TV title game. Build around the TV title, right? It's not rocket science.
I guess
maybe it was because they went out of business, but whatever. That's finances. That's the financial side. We are looking at Rob Van Dam's probably most famous opponent, aside from maybe Sabu, in ECW, and that is a man by the name of Jerry Lynn. We are watching the TV title match from Hardcore Heaven 1999. Javier, your general thoughts on the match?
I really liked it. I mean, I'm a big fan of Jerry Lynn from his Ring of Honor run. Again, people, don't stop. Don't hate me because I don't ECW. I didn't watch ECW. I was like one. But, you know, I'm a big fan of, you know, Jerry Lynn's work. He's a very good technical guy. He's always been a really, really good, like, explosive kind of wrestler, in that he really did make a lot of his high flying moves look so freaking easy. Yeah. It's kind of like AJ Styles. AJ Styles is just a guy who can do all these high flying moves, but you don't really consider him a high flyer, even though he makes it look so easy.
Yeah. Also because they have that technical prowess, so they can balance it out. It's not just high flying, like they can do a bit of both. Yeah.
And you know, it's cool because the thing about this match is someone had a fucking whistle. And I wanted to murder that person.
That person is Bill Alfonso, manager of Sabu and Rob Van Dam. He just blows on a whistle, and it's the most annoying thing in the world. And my first note here was Bill Alfonso is annoying.
See, I thought it was that, but then he got like knocked out at one point, and I still heard the freaking whistle, like clear as day.
That's 'cause it haunts your dreams. It sticks with you forever.
It was just living in my head rent free.
Yeah, exactly. Bill Alfonso lives in your head rent free.
Okay, so explain Bill Alfonso to me, because they were telling me like he was a referee at one point.
So he was a referee at one point, and then I think he was involved in like a crooked referee angle. I don't remember for certain, but then he just became a manager, and his whole thing as a manager was just being annoying as fuck. That was his whole lane, was just being, he would just blow the whistle. He had a legendary match against Beulah McGillicuddy where he got busted the fuck open. Like, yeah, actually, that's something for you to go and dive into, is Beulah versus Bill Alfonso. I don't remember exactly what the impetus was for the feud, but those two had a legendary match where like they both went, you know, Beulah wasn't really a wrestler, Bill was not a wrestler either, but they were willing to like do whatever to get over, and it was a crazy match. Like, Bill ended up with his head just gushing blood.
Jesus.
Why is wild time.
ECW.
The essence that I could describe Bill Alfonso as is like if you are living with somebody and they go away for the weekend and their alarm goes off in their room and you don't have the key to their bedroom and you just gotta have to deal with it. Bill Alfonso is that. Bill Alfonso is a human paperclip from the Microsoft
Office.
Did
you just say key to their bedroom?
Like, if you can't get it, like, if their bedroom's locked and you can't get in.
I didn't even know bedrooms had keys.
You know, roommate situation, you lock your bedroom. I'm thinking, like, people who live in residences and shit like that.
I don't know. Me and my roommate always had, like, an understanding.
We've come to an agreement.
Well, we, like, you know, I had, my only prized possession at the time was really just my Xbox. His prized possession was his PC. So, like, what the fuck? I'm not going to take his PC. That shit's big. And he's not going to take my Xbox. He's got a PC.
A little Cold War. We're good, right? No one's going to do anything.
Yeah, like, it was like a Mexican standoff. But, like, we didn't really have to worry about it.
Let's talk about the match itself. People complain about the flippy shit. You know, Osprey Ricochet being like, oh, it doesn't look like real wrestling. This is that before that existed. Like, the beginning of this match is technical. Like, obviously, it's not as choreographed, I'd say.
It's not choreographed at all, is the thing with this match. Like, even the style is the, like, a thing that, so I personally like the Osprey Ricochet stuff.
Me too.
But even I can admit, like, yeah, it's choreographed as fuck.
Yeah,
like it's 100% choreographed, and that's like, I can see why people don't like it. It's entertaining to me because, like, shit, I can't do any of that, and I think that's pretty cool. It's not supposed to. I just hate the notion that wrestling is supposed to be one thing.
Yeah,
and like, yeah, like there's no psychology to it other than they're trying to one up each other, but like, whatever, they're trying to one up each other, who gives a shit? It's really entertaining. It's not, yeah, like, we're not supposed to make wrestling like a bar fight. Like,
yeah, and honestly, there should be some wrestling that looks like a bar fight. That's fine, but not, yeah, all of it needs to look like a bar fight, right?
And it's not like every single match there is gonna look like that. It's not,
yeah,
because those are the only two freaking guys that could have that match.
That's true. But you're right, this is not choreographed, but it still has that, it's in the same vein of where it's not necessarily about, you know, the moves are done in a way where, like, there is a counter. And yes, it does look like they just know each other so well, and that's how they're kind of able to string all these reversals and counters together. But that's the first, like, 5 minutes of this match, maybe? Maybe 5-6 minutes?
Is, yeah, just, I mean, reversals. This was a lot. I mean, a lot of RVD just like going and facing the crowd and like doing stuff.
You would think he's the heel with the amount that he is taunting, and like,
he's more over than Jerry Lynn.
Well, Jerry Lynn's the heel.
Is he?
Yeah, Jerry Lynn was the heel and RVD was the face, and it didn't matter because people loved RVD. Like, RVD could have kicked a puppy, and the ECW crowd would have been like, no, the puppy deserved it.
Like, okay, so Jerry Lynn came out, and I felt like he was cheered, but it was like a soft cheer. Whereas RVD came out, and like, it was just like, It was like a golf chair, you know? I just thought people were just like, okay. Because then RVD, I was like, oh, okay, that's the response. And then RVD came out, and I was like, okay, so I... And then he's like acting like a heel on the way down. So I'm like, all right, so maybe it's just one of those deals where, like, Jerry Lynn isn't hated. He's just not as loved as RVD is. So, you know, it's a babyface heel type of deal. That's just weird. Whatever, it's ECW. Woo.
It's wild, it's crazy, it's ECW. Woo. Talk about some spots you like.
I like the beginning exchanges that they had with each other. They would just, like, there was one sequence where they just continuously missed move. Like, RVD would do, like, a flipping leg drop, or Jerry Lynn would try to drop an elbow, and they just continuously miss, and then eventually led to a stare down. Like, any of those exchanges early on where they were ended in a stare down were usually pretty good. Like, I thought the technical aspect of it early on was really fun. It really, like, the first 8 minutes of the match, something like that, is just half of it is RVD staring at the crowd. The other half of it is him staring at Jerry Lynn. And then there's like 2 minutes worth of wrestling in that. It's really annoying.
One of the first things that actually happens is a back elbow catches RVD and busts him open hard way.
Yeah, that looked actually kind of brutal.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a miscommunication, and RVD clearly got busted open over the eye in a way that he wasn't supposed to. Then they end up brawling out to the outside. You know, there's a springboard dropkick by Lynn that knocks RVD to the floor, planted by Lynn from the top. Then there's, like, RVD does his typical corkscrew leg drop with Lynn draped over. Like, he loves
to the spinning guillotine leg drop.
Yeah, he loves to do that. They go out into the stands, which I thought was hilarious. RVD planches into the stands where Lynn is onto, like, the cheap plastic. They look like school chairs. And they should be, like, they're from a local elementary school.
You mentioned it. Their financials weren't great.
What else do you like?
My favorite spot of this match, actually, was... Alfonso, like, crotches... Jerry Lynn, but Jerry Lynn, like, falls onto the other side of the barricade, and then he, like, holds a chair to his face. That spot happened later on in the match. I'm thinking of the wrong spot. So he, like, crotches Jerry Lynn, and then he, like, holds a chair to his face so that RVD could hit a Van Damminator. And then, like, Lynn, I guess he, like, wrestles out of it. The camera angle sucked, so I couldn't really figure out what was happening. And then he, like, somehow he just ends up hitting Alfonso with the chair, and then he just hits a midsection shot to RVD. A little later on, RVD went for a rolling thunder, but Lynn, like, popped up like the Undertaker, kind of.
Yeah.
And RVD, before doing the flip, like, noticed it and was like, motherfucker, stay down. So he, like, hits him with a spinning heel kick, and then he does rolling thunder again, and fucking Jerry Lynn still moves out of the way.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. I think my favorite part of the match, because there's a lot of spots. This is a match full of spots. It's pretty fun, but I don't want to go through beat by beat because, oh my God, there's so many things that happen.
There's a lot.
My favorite is there was a table that was set up before, and Lynn got backdropped into the front row, and that's when they hit the Van Damminator you're talking about on the outside.
Yeah.
RVD goes up top, and Lynn goes to meet him, and he wants to go slam him into the table this way. And the second Lynn gets up there, RVD just grabs him and tosses him over his own head. To the timekeeper's table that's on the other side. And you don't see the timekeeper's table. You just think that he has dropped him from the top turnbuckle to the floor.
Yeah, and if it wasn't for who, Joey Styles, I assume, on commentary. Yeah, if it wasn't for him saying the timekeeper thing, I would have been like, oh my God, is he okay?
Jerry Lynn's dead. And luckily, because he landed terribly. Hands around, you're like, oh, table. Okay, good.
Yeah.
I will say, shout out to Joey Styles' solo commentary game. One of the only people who can do solo commentary, and it's not unbearable.
Oh, just before that spot was the Van Damminator spot that I actually really wanted to talk about, which was so Lynn's in the crowd. He's in the front row. RVD is ringside on the ringside part of the barricade. So they're separated by the barricade. All right. And then so RVD has a chair. He tosses it to Bill Alfonso, who immediately plays hot potato with it and tosses it to Jerry Lynn, who just catches it because, you know, why not? It's not even instinct. Like a threatening like he literally just softly tosses it to Jerry Lynn. He could have easily just like not touched it. It could have hit him and he would have been fine. Yep. And then so he catches it and immediately RVD like leaps over the barricade and it's a spinning heel kick. And that was the spot of the match for me.
That was a really good Van Damme-inator. The one you were thinking about earlier is later on in the match. Alfonso brings a chair into the ring and he tosses it to Jerry Lynn, and Lynn gets it, and instead of holding it because he's learned something, he just fucking launches it at Alfonso, which I thought was, like, everyone who faces RVD should not hold a chair for more than a second. He will kick it into your face. It's his whole thing. It's his favorite thing to do.
I mean, there was also a cool, like, first off, RVD loves a chair. We gotta let that be known to the people. RVD loves a chair. Because at one point, he hits a fucking shotgun dropkick. Where he just literally drop kicks the chair straight into Jerry Lynn's face.
The man is a lot of chair-based offense and kicks. We know this. That's his whole deal.
Yeah, and then right after that spot, Jerry Lynn. So RVD's on the apron. Jerry Lynn's in a ring. He jumps over the rope, catches RVD, and hits a sunset flip powerbomb into that table that was set up ringside earlier in the match.
Yeah. Holy shit. That was the only thing I wrote for that one was holy shit. Yeah. Like
then goes that chair spike spot. And he hits a really good looking German into a bridge for a near fall. And then comes another, probably my second favorite spot of the match, which is so RVD gets up on the, so Jerry Lynn gets up on the top rope first, I believe. And then RVD joins him and it looks like he's trying to go for a belly to belly. But they're, like, taking way too long. And then they, like, flip positions. And then, like, one of them, like, goes for, like, a launch or whatever. But Jerry Lynn just ends up falling backwards. RVD is just like, shit, I kind of have to sell this. So he just, like, throws himself forward a little bit and, like, slightly crotches himself on the top rope and then falls down. And then immediately goes for a pin.
Yeah, and we get the you fucked up chance, which I always laugh because, like, y'all do better. Like, yeah, these guys fucked up trying to do a belly-to-belly suplex off the top of the turnbuckle.
They just were trying to do way too much.
You do better.
No, I will give the crowd, actually, like, they are allowed to say it in this situation. Because
they did,
like,
try to do too much.
They were trying to do way too much. Why the fuck are you guys, like, doing the waltz on the top rope, trying to jockey for fucking belly-to-belly positioning?
We get to the ending. Split leg and moonsault by RVD for a two. Huge frog splash, but Lynn reverses the cover. So he, you know, had the presence of mind to try to roll him up. Van Damme kicks out. We get one more Van Damme-inator, another frog splash, huge W. Obviously, Rob Van Damme wins, as he had to continue on this title reign for about another half a year after this, before having to vacate it only when he broke his ankle.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that RVD was still able to do the stuff that he's able to do, even after the injuries, it's kind of insane to me. Because we'll get to that. I mean,
yeah, we'll talk about some more injuries throughout.
He had a major injury that I'm like, when he was saying what it was, I was kind of like, what the fuck?
Yeah, how do you come back from that?
Because we know what happens after that, so it's like
it's crazy.
And he like never really slowed down either. He's always kind of just been the same bendy boy.
he's a bendy boy. Let's move to our second match. So we're looking now at RVD in the WWE. So he was part of the Invasion angle. And we're looking at his fourth IC title win. So he said three IC championships before this. He won once. He's part of the Invasion, one of the only stars from ECW, like I said. At WrestleMania X8, he beat William Regal. He defeated Eddie Guerrero in a ladder match 02 for his second IC title. And his third one was beating Benoit at SummerSlam 02. Rob Van Dam was actually the one who unified and kind of absorbed the hardcore and European titles during an IC title reign, so that was cool.
Yeah, didn't he beat Triple H?
I don't know if it was Triple H. I know he beat Tommy Dreamer for one, I think the hardcore. And I think he beat Jeff Hardy for the European. Triple H is the one who unified the IC title with the World Heavyweight title back when they got rid of all titles.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the portion of time. Remember when he was the IC guy because they like didn't want him to be the main event, I guess. I don't know. There was a really weird run there for Triple H in the early 2000s. Yeah, before.
I don't think Van Damme was a part of it, but he might have been. We also are skipping over his memorable tag team with Kane, leading to Kane's unmasking.
Unfortunately.
He was the one who was part of that. Kane unmasking, huge mistake.
No.
That's my opinion. Huge mistake. It looked, great always looked better idea. With the mask. Great idea. It did lead to a really good era of Kane. It should have been near the end of the run of Kane.
Or he should have. I'll tell you what should have not been a thing. The fruit roll-up mask that he wears nowadays.
Yeah,
that's got to go.
That's got to go. We are instead looking, like I said, at his fourth win, and this is versus Christian. Ladder match from Raw, September 29th, 2003. He was feuding with Christian and Jericho over the IC title. I wanted to pick a maybe less remembered RVD match. Plus, any excuse to get Christian. Christian just came back in the Rumble. Give Christian! That man one more match. He still got it. Christian still got it.
Yeah, you know what? Let's just bring RVD back to the WWE. Have him face Christian. Have him face Edge. Bring back Jericho for one night only. Let's just throw the IC title into a time warp.
Yeah, not a bad idea. I mean, I like where it is right now. I like where the IC title is right now. It can stay.
I don't even know who the IC champion is. Who's the IC champion? Oh, it's Big E. Okay.
It's Big E. Now, what were your thoughts on this match? Had you seen it before? And if so, what did you remember?
I have no memory of this match whatsoever. This match is not a thing that I knew of. I liked it. It was just a train wreck from beginning to end, really. You could see, I mean, Christian, when he was in that early stage, split from Edge, away from the whole Team Canada thing that they were going around there, when he was just by himself as the heel guy, pre-Tomko, he really had, like, this weird style to him because it was slow. So I really wasn't expecting this to be as much of a train wreck as it was, because that just didn't fit the style that Christian really had as a heel at the time. Yeah. The style that Christian had as a heel at the time was basically just, when you hear his theme and you realize how much it sucks, that's the style that Christian has. Because this theme is the worst. Between and the, you know, the obviously, if you close your eyes, you know, the great, two great themes. This one is in the middle, and it's like, oh, now I see why Vince McMahon didn't think this was a top guy.
This is why I thought he put the blue dot over his face.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I like this match. I mean, it starts off pretty hot because, fuck, RVD hits a goddamn somersault plancha onto Christian while he's holding a ladder, like, within the first minute.
Which he does in another match we're watching. Like, Van Damme, stop it. Let the man put the ladder down.
No. It hurts more with the ladder involved.
One thing I want to talk about before we talk about the match, because we talked about the taunts and RVD's taunt. The Rob Van Damme thumb point taunt is so smart. It's so simple. It's so dumb. Everyone can do it. I did it. I remember going to a house show, and I saw Rob Van Dam, and he stopped in front of. I was in the front row, right by the corner, on the way to the right by the ring steps. It was me and my buddy and my brother, and Rob Van Dam stopped and did the RVD taunt with us. And I was like, "This is the coolest fucking thing that's ever happened to me." I was like 10. I was like, "This is the greatest. Life has peaked. Everything after this is downhill." And I was right, but. It's everyone can do it, and you see it in all these matches, because Rob Van Dam every time is over as fuck, and everybody does the taunt. Everybody.
See, it's ironic that you say that, and it's ironic that it's against Christian, because the thing that I would do the most as a kid, aside from the Eddie Guerrero, you know, shoulder shimmy, was the Christian three taps on the chest. I used to do the fucking Christian taps to the chest all the time. All the time. Like, it didn't matter. No, if people at school didn't even understand the reference, and I was like with my hand over my face, just like, you guys just don't even know. I'm the fucking coolest guy. I'm fucking Christian Cage, motherfucker. And like it's funny that you say that, because like it just kind of reminded me, like, yeah, I was a fucking Christian mark when I was a kid.
But you know what we all did? The Jeff Hardy entrance.
100%. 100%.
And it's cool.
The amount of times that I would burst into my room just like stumbling, and then just dun, dun. Like, I fucking love doing that.
All right. So let's get into the actual match. Christian sets up a ladder bridge on the outside, and they're trying to toss each other into it. Christian gets front suplexed onto it. And then RVD gets on the barricade and does his classic corkscrew spinning leg drop guillotine onto Christian. Yeah. One thing I will say, and we'll talk about this probably as we go on, if you're going to watch these matches, watching a lot of RVD matches in a row does get a little cut and paste. And
so over, cut and paste.
And it doesn't matter what era you pull it from, he's been the same for like 20 years.
Yeah.
Like, he got to do a little bit more in ECW. We didn't really touch on all of his ECW stuff because he wanted to hit some of his kind of more well-known or his like the expanse of his run, because a lot of his time is spent in WWE. But, man, he's been the same forever.
He really has been. Like, yeah. He's still going today, and it's still, like, it's bouncy guy.
Similar, yeah. The matches are the same, yeah.
Like, RVD is getting up there in age. He's probably around the same age as most of the legends nowadays, like 45-ish. So it's like, dude, you have a plan on just, like, changing?
He is 50.
RVD's 50?
RVD is 50.
RVD's older than Edge?
RVD's older than Edge. He's 50.
I would not have guessed that. Never in a million years would I have guessed that.
A move that I was impressed with, they're in the ring. RVD hits a giant military press slam, and I was surprised. RVD, you don't think of it as like a power guy.
Here's the thing, though. It's Christian.
Christian's small, yeah.
Like, I feel like, I'm not even joking when I say this. I genuinely feel like me currently could probably military press Christian.
You are probably right. But the thing that was most impressive is he drops him behind him immediately, and then the second he lands, RVD does a standing moonsault onto him, and that was a cool combo.
Fun fact about that. Speaking of the IC title, the second he did that, I was like, oh my god, Wuhan Nation! Because that was Apollo Crews' yeah. finisher in the indies.
Yep. Which, it seems like... Like, I think they should go that way with Apollo Crews right now, because he's just on the most...
It's looking like it. I mean, this is the Wuhan Nation gimmick.
Yeah, like, are they going to let him change his name? That would be cool as hell.
That's not... If I were him, I wouldn't let that happen, first off. Because let's just say the WWE thing don't work out, I'm going to want that name back.
That's true. That's a good call. We get the whole everyone climbs, somebody interrupts. So RVD climbs up, Christian interrupts. Monkey flip by RVD onto the ladder. And then Christian's on the ladder, and we get a Rolling Thunder, which looked like it hurt like hell. Rolling Thunder's a cool move, too.
Hell.
Yeah.
Rolling Thunder is a cool move, but it looks like it sucks. Because he just lands with like full
with his whole weight. Body.
Yeah. Just right on your ribs.
And unlike a lot of high flyers, RVD is not small.
And he does it like... So when Rey Mysterio does like his little dive off the rope, so what is the West Coast Pop?
Yeah.
Like, he does it and you could... Like, there's like a little brace for him. Like, he's not throwing his full weight on you. RVD, it doesn't matter if he's doing the frog splash, doesn't matter if he's doing the regular splash, doesn't matter if he's doing the Rolling Thunder. It seems like he just fucking dead weights your ass no matter what.
Yeah, exactly. Christian's on like lying on a ladder again. RVD goes for the 5-star frog splash, and Christian was playing possum, so he gets out of the way. RVD's hurt. Christian gets his hands on the title, and RVD drop kicks the ladder down at the last moment, which I thought was a really great spot. And then they're both on the ladder. Ladder teeters. Christian falls. RVD lands on another ladder that was standing up, which I thought was cool. It goes all the way up to the top. And commentator's like, oh no, RVD, what are you doing? What do you think he's doing? What do you think that man's about to do from the top?
He's going to the moon.
To the moon. No, he's going to hit him with a massive frog splash. And then I like the ending. I like the little finish, the little thing. I like when people do this. RVD puts the ladder right over top of Christian. Like, he puts the rung over top of his chest so he can't get up. It's funny.
See, my favorite will always be the, what was it, Edge? When Edge got, like, stuck in one of the, just, like, the middle rungs during one of those ladder matches, and that's how he lost the WWE title.
Yes. Yes. I think we've seen Jericho do that, too, in, like, a tag title match or, like, a multi-man match.
Yeah, it's something that Jericho would do as well. I think it was actually against John Cena that Edge thing happened.
What a heelish way for John Cena to win things.
Oh, we'll talk about heel John Cena in a moment.
RVD puts the ladder on Christian, grabs the bell, wins its fourth IC title. I spoiled it when I introduced the match. But you know what? This match is 18 years old. You can deal with the spoilers.
Yeah, RVD won a lot of IC titles.
Yeah, the man was a mid-card king. Any last thoughts on this match before we move on?
Christian!
a solid last thought. We're going to take our first commercial break. When we get back, we're looking at ECW One Night Stand. Back from the break, and we're looking at RVD's promo now. This is his promo from ECW One Night Stand. He had injured his knee in January 05, so he was out recovering during the first ECW One Night Stand, which was in 2005. He was recovering from surgery on his ACL and his meniscus, which were both torn. That is an intense injury for a guy like Rob Van Dam.
Again, the fact that he was able to come back from something like that is insane. Because it's not, all right, we get it. People tear their ACLs all the time nowadays, and they come back fine. This is fucking 2005?
Yep.
Like, think Derrick Rose. That was 10 years ago.
Oh, it still hurts.
10 years ago. And if Derrick Rose had just torn his ACL, like, 2-3 years after that fact, he would have probably been perfectly fine. But he's not, because he did it then. Like, torn ACLs were devastating up until like 2013-14, when the science was just like, yeah, we've advanced far enough.
Man, D Rose
still hurts. Yeah, it hurts, man. It hurts. It does. I mean, it's unfortunate. That injury is just devastating. And it's not just the fact that he tore his ACL, but he tore his meniscus as well. Like, stability in the knee is just gone at that point. Yeah. You know?
The fact that he's made the comeback that he has been impressive.
Yeah, this is insane. Like, I honestly didn't even know this injury existed for RVD. So yeah. Just the fact that he not only came back from it, but was basically in no way, shape, or form affected by it as far as his in-ring product is insane to me. Because he didn't slow down. He didn't change his style. Like, he just kept going.
Yep. So RVD is here to do a work shoot promo, essentially. JBL and the rest of the WWE heels are up in the balcony of the Hammerstein Ballroom, because that's where it was, which is a good touch, because they're just, you know, there to be assholes and for the ECW faithful to scream at, which I thought was fine.
First thing I thought of was, oh god, JBL is talking.
And JBL gets his mic cut off. RVD is here with Bill Chicken Alfonso, and he, like I said, JBL gets his mic cut off. RVD yells at the heels because this show has nothing to do with them.
Yeah, shut your mouth. This has nothing to do with you.
You deserve zero credit for tonight's success. And RVD says he has no creative geniuses writing his script tonight. So, you know, he's shooting from the hip.
With both hands.
Yeah, pow pow.
Yeah, my note here was really just to RVD taking a flamethrower to JVL. Next note was, damn, RVD taking a flamethrower to WWE now.
He talks about how, like, he's like, hey, Alfonso, or hey, Fonzie, remember when RVD's vocabulary wasn't limited to whatever and cool? Which is true. Like, he did talk more in ECW than he was allowed to in WWE. Like, that's,
I mean, just look at the first match. He was talking shit throughout the entire match. He was genuinely just talking to the crowd. And really,
I considered picking an ECW promo, but I think this is one of the only times where, like, RVD gets, like, let loose on the company, you know, or you know. He was just giving him, like, because my thinking was, he talks about being, like, underutilized, really. Like, this is his issues with management. Aside from not being able to cut promos, not being allowed to cut promos, was RVD really not used properly? Because I think he was used fine.
I mean, there was a point there where, like, you know, post, like, probably around just a little after the match that we had with Christian, where he really wasn't used. Like, I don't really remember a lot of RVD during that time period at all. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, when I was watching wrestling. And yeah, I wasn't watching Raw as much, but it's also, like, you know, one of those things where that's, like, important, just visibility and being put in positions where you matter. And I felt like RVD was always just kind of like a throwaway guy. Like, how, you know, obviously for a very long time Kofi was kind of just like a discarded kind of, like, yeah, we'll throw him in this IC title match, but it's not really a consequential type of deal, and we'll throw him in random matches on TV. Everyone knows Kofi Kingston. We love Kofi Kingston, but we're not going to do anything with Kofi Kingston. Yeah, I felt like RVD was a guy who was in that kind of role for a very long time there.
Yeah, he was. So I can see his frustration, but at the same time, I'm like, man's like a four-time IC champion by now. I think a couple-time tag team champ. Like, what are you doing, man? Like, underutilized maybe, but you also aren't great at cutting promos. Like, this is the best promo you have. And yeah. this is good. It's just not really a promo. It's just you complaining.
I actually, oddly enough, heard this on the Bill Simmons podcast earlier today. He had David Shoemaker, who is an excellent person who talks about wrestling and just media in general. And they were talking about how the issue with Vince McMahon is that he always wants people to be like The Rock. Yeah. Like, he wants you to be a master on the stick. He wants you to be able to do all that. But, like, you don't need that to be a top guy. Like, you just don't need the crowd behind you. Like, Daniel Bryan has turned into an excellent promo. Daniel Bryan was not a good promo before, like, 2014. Like, he just wasn't. And he cut fiery promos, but he was awkward on the mic. And, you know, it's one of those things where it takes time to develop. And maybe, like, if you told me that AJ Styles was going to start cutting promos the way AJ Styles started cutting promos in the WWE, I would have been fucking shocked, because AJ Styles was a terrible promo in TNA.
Yeah.
Like, terrible.
And for some reason, WWE has gone so far away, despite having many legendary managers in their history. And having what could have been a bumper crop of managers right now, they are so hesitant to use them and use them effectively, because I don't know what their issue is. They want the wrestlers to do it all. Like, why not? You know, they obviously released Zelina Vega for other reasons, but, like, Zelina Vega was a good manager. Malcolm Bivens is a good manager. Like, there are, like, people you could, if somebody is all the talent in the world, MVP just coached Bobby Lashley up to world champion level. Like, Bobby Lashley's great on his own. MVP is part of the reason that he got there, right?
Yeah. And, obviously, it wouldn't have made a whole bunch of sense because at the time he's paired off with Brock Lesnar, but Paul Heyman is right there.
Yep.
Like, it makes sense to pair him off with RVD. They're the ECW guys. You know, that could have been a gimmick. Or, again, like, hell, you said he was paired off with Bill Alfonso and wasn't the heel. Like, he could make it work. He could make anything work. The guy, sure. RVD's a talented individual. And, like, I'm not saying that he should have been, like, the focus of WWE. But, like, this promo here showed that he had a whole lot of value as a top guy. And, you know, he obviously has a lot of cachet, because I understand it's an ECW crowd. It's an ECW pay-per-view. But, fuck, like, he was just over. He just was. And it
He's
really
one of those people
just,
who were perpetually over, too.
Yeah, it's super annoying when WWE just doesn't pull the trigger on guys, because, like, yeah, but they're just not The Rock.
They're not the one we wanted.
Like, I hate that so much.
So RVD says it was his idea to do One Night Stand, which I think is partially true.
Yeah, he's actually, that is a shoot. He played a very, very big role in One Night Stand being a thing.
And RVD also says he is ECW, and then he gets gored by Rhino. We get a gore appearance. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, I was, like, fucking taken out by that. I was like, what the fuck? Where did Rhino come from?
Because then that leads to an impromptu match between Sabu and Rhino, which I believe Sabu wins on the ECW One Night Stand card the first time.
And then Rhino goes to TNA, and that's where I was introduced to Rhino.
Let's look at our third match. This is the second ever Money in the Bank ladder match from WrestleMania 22. So it's RVD, of course, versus Matt Hardy V1 versus then current IC champion Shelton Benjamin, my boy, versus Finlay versus Ric Flair versus current in today's age WWE champion at time of recording, Bobbert Lashley. What a weird combination of people. Yeah.
And I'm going to be honest with you, this is genuinely one of my favorite Money in the Bank matches.
It's good. It's really good.
Like, just for straight up entertainment purposes, in my opinion, this is one of the top ones. Just because of two words. Ric Flair. Ric Flair was awesome in this match.
The man is doing side quests at this point in his wrestling career. He's like, ladder match? Sure, I can do one of those.
It's his only second one of his career. The first was that ladder match he had with Edge for the Intercontinental title, which is a banger, and I can't wait to do that on an episode one day. But this is freaking awesome. Like, just seeing Ric Flair go out there, what did they say he was, like, 57 years old?
Yeah, he is just old. He's old.
He looks out of shape. He looks like he's all of 57 years old. But damn, if he isn't the most charismatic dude ever.
So this is originally going to be the type of match that was going to bring ECW back. You know the story behind that, right?
No.
So originally, Jericho came up Jericho and I think one of the writers came up with the idea of like a ladder match for something. And originally it wasn't going to be a Money in the Bank, like as we currently know it. It was going to be called a Hollywood Dream Ladder Match. And the person who won would be able to get like a dream fulfilled, whatever their wildest dream was. And the plan was for RVD to win and bring back the ECW brand as his dream. That was going to be the kind of the end goal. And then eventually it shifted and adjusted and turned into the Money in the Bank that we know now. I think Money in the Bank is a better concept.
It's way better, in my opinion.
But I think that like that would have been a cool way for ECW to come back. It would have made RVD the most over person in ECW even more, because he's the one who would, like, kayfabe, be responsible for him for it coming back. But instead, we get the Money in the Bank ladder match, and what a strong type of match it is.
What would your dream be?
Shelton Benjamin world champion.
No, because my dream would just be fucking give me the world title. Like, that's it. Vince, here we go. What, like, a second I win, I would get on the mic and be like, yeah, main event's canceled, motherfuckers. I'm now the world champion.
My dream would be they break up the WWE monopoly into three different companies. Three different companies, and everybody gets to be unionized.
We've got a kayfabe, Evan. I don't mean like real dreams. I'm talking like if Jericho's thing had gone to fruition.
Oh, then I win the. I get to be the fourth member of New Day, and we win the tag titles. Yes, yes, yes.
That's so on brand. Anyways, the match starts, and everyone gangs up on Lashley, because at this point, Bobby Lashley isn't even like the super hyped prospect.
He's just, you know, new.
He's just new, and he's big.
Like,
and
beat up the new guy.
Muscular as fuck. Like, he's a year away from being Vince McMahon's enemy and Donald Trump's best friend.
Right. Jesus Christ.
He's just kind of there. And it's really interesting because this is kind of like seeing the Lashley of nowadays, where he's kind of like the silent assassin type of deal.
The best way to book Lashley.
Yeah. As opposed to what the fuck they were doing a year on from this ladder match.
Or when he was feuding with Sami Zayn when he got back.
We don't talk about that. Or the Lana storyline or anything that happened from pre-hurt return business up until her business.
Yep.
Yeah. We don't talk about that. But anyways, they all gang up on Lashley. RVD hits a basement dropkick from the ring to the outside. Fucking dropkicks the ladder right into Matt Hardy's face. And then it's just like, somersault plancha.
He does it again, this time to Matt
Hardy. No, he doesn't do a somersault. He just does a regular plancha.
I was like, why do you keep doing this? It's so dangerous.
And then we get the spot that everyone knows and loves. Because your boy.
Love this fucking spot.
Go ahead, Evan.
Paused it and made my fiance come watch. The ladder is leaned up against the ropes in the ring. And everybody is kind of gathering outside. And Shelton Benjamin's in the ring. And that boy runs up the ladder and dives onto everybody. And it's so smooth. He is such a good athlete. Why didn't we book this man with a manager to get him the title?
Hey, we booked him with a manager. It was just his mama.
Which was such a bad time. But this was really good.
It's made even more impressive on the replay, because you get to see the little tidbits of it. Where he gets to the end and then he still uses the rope. And he's like, you know, it's kind of like a diving board type deal. And it looks so cool. It's such a clean flip. Perfect rotation.
So good.
Lands it right. And honestly, in my opinion, not even the best spot he had this match.
Let's get to that after. Hardy suplexes Flair off of the ladder. And Flair gets the X thrown up for him. They're like, oh, no, Flair's dead.
My man gets superplexed off.
I'm out. They show the replay being like, oh, let's see if we can figure out where Ric Flair got hurt. Nowhere.
Just takes a clean suplex off the... Admittedly...
Back bump.
Like, the guy's, like, fucking old.
Yeah.
And, Evan...
If your grandfather took that back bump, that would be a bad time. My grandfather...
Well, admittedly, my grandfather is 86 and a cancer survivor and has diabetes, so...
No back bumps for grandpa.
No back rub for grandpa.
Jesus. All right.
If I did that to you, I'm pretty sure you would be fucked up somehow.
I would be fucked. I would not move for the next 3 to 6 business weeks.
An ex would need...
Yeah.
An ex would RVD, need to be thrown up.
RVD hits a drop toe hold and lands Shelton Benjamin on the ladder. We get the Rolling Thunder, and Shelton moves again, and RVD hits the ladder with the Rolling Thunder, so all of his weight coming down the ladder, that hurts. And while this is happening, Flair walks to the back.
Yeah, Lashley and Shelton start fighting on top of the ladder. Hurt Business, baby.
That's right, Hurt Business content.
Hurt Business. And then
Benjamin tries to sunset flip him off the ladder.
Yeah, but he is not, he's weak boy. Bobby Lashley is strong boy, and we need more strong boys. So we get two people to join up with it. I believe it was Hardy and Finlay.
Yes, and Finlay didn't do a lot in this match, but this was something Finlay did.
We respect Finlay for his efforts out there.
That's true.
I love Finlay. And then we get a triple powerbomb. Shield style, baby. Ooh-wah.
Is this when Flair comes back?
Is it when Flair comes back?
I think Flair comes back right.
Yeah, Flair comes back right after the powerbomb. He comes out with all the bravado in the world. And the second he came out, I go, he should have won this fucking match.
Flair comes back out after a quick dip in the Lazarus pit. And he's just like, yeah, I'm good. Let's do this thing. I'm ready. And so he gets up the ladder and there's nobody around. He's fine. He touches the briefcase. And then Finlay arrives and clubs him with the shillelagh.
Yeah, just knocks his shit. Flair takes a clean back bump off the top of the ladder.
Impromptu spelling quiz. Spell shillelagh.
I don't know, because I tried to spell it on my phone, and like I obviously spelled it wrong, and the autocorrect wouldn't work. And I was
it wasn't close enough to get the autocorrect to be like, I think you mean this.
I know there's the lay is the L-E-I-G-H, right?
Yeah. It literally is she and then two of those. So she lay lay.
Oh
yeah,
I was so close. So I did she, one of the lays, and then L A Y.
Ah, she lay lay.
She lay lays. And so then Shelton and Finlay start fighting at the top of the ladder, but Lashley knocks him off, and then hits a Dominator on Shelton that looked kind of shit.
I love the Dominator.
Yeah, but that one specifically looked kind of shit.
It did, but the Dominator as the finisher is great. One thing I liked when Finlay and Benjamin were on the ladder is that the briefcase was swinging because it had been hit by Flair.
Yeah.
All briefcases and all things hanging above rings should be swinging. It makes it so much more interesting because then you got to time it, and then they don't have to climb the ladder so slow. They can be like trying to time it so when they get up there, it's actually like near them. It should always be moving.
Yeah, like, but that's
like a little Roomba controlling.
I don't see how you could do that. Just continuously, like, unless it's like a closed like arena, because somebody could just go up on the rafters and just like continuously start swinging the thing.
It's Sting. He's just fucking moving it.
Just, hey, Ricochet, you're not doing anything tonight. How about you get up there on the rafters and start swinging?
You're gonna move the belt, damn it! I'm gonna win the belt. No, move the belt.
Ricochet, you're gonna be a part of the Money in the Bank match. Yeah, what's my role? You're up on the rafters. You're going to swing the briefcase.
Anyways, Lashley's climbing the ladder now. It's his turn. And RVD hits like a type of Van Damminator off the turnbuckle to Lashley's back.
Yeah.
Which was weird. It worked. It also took a second for Lashley to sell it.
Yeah, because it looked like the chair didn't like... It like barely touched him.
Oh, no. And then kind of falls off the ladder.
Oh, so my favorite part of that, like, spinning briefcase thing was the fact that I genuinely believe that Vince McMahon knows who the fuck Ricochet is.
Oh.
But anyways, that. And then RVD is reaching for the briefcase. And then comes the best spot Shelton Benjamin had in this match, in my opinion. From off camera, jumps straight up to the top ladder. He vaulted there from the top rope. I wish I had an angle of that because it probably looked so cool. Because he landed it so cleanly.
Yeah, it was clean as hell.
No hitch, no ladder shake, no nothing. Just clean, and immediately just starts raining in the punches on RVD.
So then Hardy comes in and he has a ladder beside them and gets up there and starts battling them. Benjamin actually moves from his ladder with RVD to the ladder with Hardy, which was a big mistake.
Dumb babyface Shelton Benjamin.
Because RVD then takes his foot and just pushes their ladder over, and they both tumble to the floor. RVD grabs the briefcase and immediately falls to the floor, WWE game style.
He does that all the time. He did it with the IC title. Yeah. He does it with this thing. It's like, all right, Robert, calm it down, buddy.
Calm it down, Bob. RVD wins the match. A really fun Money in the Bank match. Let's take our last commercial break. When we get back, we're going to look at his cash-in of the Money in the Bank contract. Back from the break, ECW One Night Stand 2006. WWE Championship match. RVD has cashed in against John Cena.
One of the worst days of my life.
He announced his cash-in for the event on the May 22nd Raw. Cena apparently got jumped by a bunch of ECW's wrestlers in the build-up and had a match with, like, Sabu at one point.
He did.
RVD has never been world champion. He never won it in ECW. He was always a TV title holder. You say this is one of the worst days of your life. Please explain.
Because Vince McMahon caved to the masses. There was a sign that said, if Cena wins, we riot. There were a lot of chants from this crowd, this terrible Philadelphia crowd, that I'd rather not repeat because I am pure boy. And I just want to let everyone here know that Vince McMahon is a coward who caved in to the masses and gave them what they wanted. But those people don't deserve it. They don't. Not with all the obscenities they yelled at my pure big match Johnny boy, John.
So Cena is booed in enemy territory, obviously.
But mercilessly booed.
The boos were muted during the entrance more than they actually were during the real show. Because I remember this show. And
yeah, I've seen the daily motion of the just raw, uncut audio of the match.
I love the way that Cena walks in, though. Title overhead, head down, just like through enemy territory. I thought that was great.
Just a fucking $1 million. Like, you're telling me right now that John Cena walks out into the arena and you're just like, all right, that guy fucking deserves that belt. Like, he deserves to win. He should stay with the belt. And he's dressed in all black. This motherfucker's Darth Vader coming into this bitch. Like, yo, he should be champion in about 3 hours from now.
He tries to do his typical toss the hat into the crowd and toss the shirt into the crowd. It takes the first 10 minutes of the match because they keep getting tossed back, including one dude who violently spits on it multiple times before throwing it back.
Yeah, and then he touches it.
Yeah, one dude who tosses it and it lands on the ropes, which I thought was hilarious.
That happened twice.
Yes, because the other one landed on the bottom rope, right?
Yes, the last one.
And one guy who tosses it back to him, which I am pretty sure is a security guard.
Sir, this was freaking, this was a screw job. This was actually a screw job. This was not a regular match. John Cena had all the odds stacked against him, and normally he overcomes. But damn it, when the masses are rioting and Vince McMahon caves because he's a pussy, you know, it's difficult. It's for big match Johnny John Boy John to be able to do anything here.
People are tossing things like toilet paper at Cena because he's shit.
No. They're tossing it at him because he's the shit. That is what. That is why he will lay your ass down for the 3 second count. Don't mess with him, Evan.
Imagine if WWE ECW actually had this energy instead of the zombie.
Dude, imagine if WWE had any energy whatsoever.
That's a good point. So the fans don't stop chanting all match. It's they rip on Cena for not being able to wrestle. He tries new stuff like a diving axe handle from the top rope to the outside, and they just
hit a cradle suplex. Care. He hit a motherfucking cradle suplex. I've never seen John Cena hit that move again, ever. And he did it there, and it worked, and it was beautiful, and he got booed for it. Fuck those people.
They gave him no space. They didn't care. Nothing. He could have hit like a 630 and then a Phoenix splash and then a cattle, like, didn't matter. Nothing he did was going to impress them.
The worst part about it is John, all right, so Rob Van Dam misses an enziguri and then catches him with a rebound mule kick, which looked really fucking cool, except, like, whatever, because John Cena hit a cradle suplex. So, yeah, my favorite part of this match actually is Cena finally like lets it get to him, and he just gets in RVD's face, and he's like, "Yo, I'm gonna fucking kick your ass." Like when John Cena got her comfortably close. First off, social distancing. Second off. Like way too close. You could probably like smell each other's breaths. It's terrible. And then like third, John Cena looked like $1 billion. That's not even $1 million, man. That is $1 billion look right there that man had on. Because like fucking just turn him heel right now and Cena let's walk out of here with this title belt. Honestly,
Cena did great heelish. Yeah, he did.
If they had kept that title on John Cena and he had walked out as a heel, like this Vince McMahon would have been a billionaire a decade sooner. Seriously, this was the time.
They brawl out into the crowd. My favorite part of the match, I think, is they're in the crowd. Cena finds a sign that says, fuck John Cena, puts it on RVD's face, and then takes it away and punches RVD, which I thought was just really funny.
Love that.
There's a lot of spots in the match. It's all about the energy. Who cares about the spots, really?
Yeah, they say same old shit after he hits a power slam. I've never seen John Cena hit a power slam before.
I think the spot to really get to was when John really lets everything get to him in this match. So RVD gets locked in a STFU, and it's really poorly locked in because it's locked in by John, and he's good at lots of things. The STFU is not one of them.
Yeah, big match Johnny John boy only knows how to lock that in when it's like fucking Batista or something.
RVD gets the ropes, and Cena won't break the hold. So the ref, John Finnegan, pulls him off. He pushes the ref. Ref pushes him back, and that's when Cena's like, that's it. Fuck this place. And clotheslines the ref, which is big because it's like the ECW referee was John Finnegan. Cena then goes up top, superplexes RVD. John Finnegan's down. Cena gets stairs and cracks RVD with them.
Cracks him with it.
And this is the first time the crowd has shut up the whole match because they're like, wait a second, it's happening. It's fucking happening. John's going to win. And then Nick Patrick, SmackDown referee and former NWO crony, is out there. He counts the pin, and there's only a two count.
It would have been so perfect if John Cena had won because Nick Patrick had given him the win. So
He would have started another NWO.
He's already dressed in all black.
That's true. Ready.
He was dressed for a fucking funeral, and the funeral should have been the hopes and dreams of Philadelphia.
Man, your Philadelphia hatred is infectious.
Me, I'm not like Philadelphia and Detroit, it's a three-way of hate. That is a triple of hate.
Three-way dance of hatred. So RVD gets AA'd or FU'd to the outside, and as it happens, a masked man appears. He's got a biker helmet on and spears Cena through a table that was set up earlier and knocks down the ref. It's Edge. 2021 Royal Rumble winner Edge.
I was so fucking confused looking back on this because I know this happens. I've seen this match way too many times. But like that spot always confused me because it's like, why the fuck was he wearing a biker helmet?
To disguise himself.
With a trench coat. It's like,
he's the rated R superstar. He drives bikes. Yeah. Woo.
It's like,
rock
bro,
and roll.
You're the number one contender. Like, you don't even have to hide. It's yeah, like the ECW people don't hate you.
Yeah, you're fine. So then RVD recovers, gets up top for what was probably the best five-star frog splash of any of the matches. I think
I would argue it's one of the best of his career.
Yeah,
overall,
it's really good.
It looked very good.
Nick Patrick is dead. So Paul Heyman,
all he got was like Edge literally just punched him.
Yeah. So Paul Heyman appears to count the three. RVD has won the WWE Championship, his first world title, which is very exciting. RVD would get a drug possession arrest, lose both the WWE and ECW titles in two nights, and not return to that level ever again in WWE. Sad. Pain.
All over some fucking weed.
All over some weed, which you can just buy at a fucking pharmacy now. Like,
Seth Rogen has a weed company. Jim Belushi is just over here promoting his weed on Twitter. Like,
fair. And then RVD left WWE in 2007 feeling burnt out. Our next match actually looks at RVD when he returned to the world championship scene, just not in WWE. Our last match is the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. RVD defending against one AJ Styles at TNA Sacrifice May 16th, 2010. So RVD debuted in TNA on March 8th, which was the first full-time Impact to go head-to-head with Raw on Monday nights. Remember how that went, people? RVD defeated Styles to win the World Championship on the April 19th Impact. And at this point, Styles is a part of a team with one Ric Flair. And I know you had thoughts the second you saw AJ Styles in a robe.
Oh my God. So this starts off. AJ comes out. He's wearing a fucking robe. And I knew immediately. I knew immediately this was going to be a shitty match. Like, it's AJ Styles is an excellent wrestler. AJ Styles is probably the best in-ring performer of the last 20 years. But oh my fucking God, did TNA mess up AJ Styles after the year like 2007? It was so bad. Like, he had so many shitty runs, shitty matches, like shitty gimmicks. And it just wasn't his fault. They forced him into this slow pace that wasn't even methodical. It was just slow. And yeah, he does a lot of the classic AJ Styles moves. But like, by that point, you're so fucking bored out of your mind that it doesn't even matter. Like, they paired him off with Ric Flair. And it's weird because AJ Styles has nothing in common with Ric Flair. AJ Styles is like
two very different lifestyles.
AJ Styles is a fucking wholesome fucking Christian man who lives in Georgia. Like, he's nothing like Richard Flair. And it's just fucking terrible. I hated everything about it, and it was a terrible time period for me. And honestly, it was high key the beginning of the end for me of TNA, because it was the point where I started losing interest, because AJ was my favorite part of TNA.
Fair. Hard to come back from that.
It really is. And then we get to the match, and Devin, just let the people know what happens.
So Earl Hebner's here too, which made me laugh, because, you know, I love
when I didn't notice him at the beginning. I didn't notice him until he started getting into it with Flair. And once he did, I was like, oh, fucking
hell. Honestly, I have nothing to say about the actual in-ring action, because watching too many RVD matches in a row, the RVD stuff gets stale. Like you said, Styles is not doing his normal stuff here. The match isn't great, but it's like one of the better rated RVD title matches in TNA.
Which I find weird, because I feel like there was a good assortment of talent there that he could have worked with. I know Samoa Joe wasn't really in the main event scene at this point in time, because they were just abusing that guy at that point. But like, I feel like, I don't know, maybe like a Kurt Angle, you know, maybe an Austin Aries. I don't remember if Austin Aries was around in TNA still at that point in time, or if he was still an X Division guy. You know, there was a lot of people that he could have gone up against, and it was just so weird that they just wouldn't like even think about putting him in there with someone that didn't have a shitty gimmick like AJ Styles at this point.
So Flair gets tossed by Hebner, who hits Flair, which is wild. Also, Ric Flair in a t-shirt is a weird sight. I hate it.
He didn't look bad though.
It's just weird. It just looks weird.
Didn't look bad.
Flair gets on the headset at commentary and says Earl Hebner is a dead man, so like face turn for Flair in your eyes.
Yeah, honestly, Ric Flair was actually pretty good on commentary in this match.
He got lost a lot. Would get teed up by Taz or Tanay, and then they wouldn't have anything to see. He wouldn't actually land what he was supposed to say, and then they would kind of have to awkwardly keep talking.
It's Ric Flair, you know? Like,
it's not an excuse. Get the fuck off commentary if you can't commentate.
You take the good with the bad. But I thought he was fine here. I mean, there was a lot of parts where he was like dissecting AJ, dissecting the match itself, aside from the outrageous character stuff, where I thought he was actually really good.
But what the fuck was he talking about when he goes off about seeing NBA All-Stars and NFL All-Pros, and they're like, but they just see Ric Flair. Shut up. What are you talking about? You raving lunatic.
Like, Ric Flair is a bigger star than NFL Pro Bowlers and NBA All-Stars. What the fuck you want him to do?
Styles gets all the offense in for a while, and then RVD finally gets some offense in with a thrust kick and a gigantic monkey flip.
Goes flying with that thing.
He goes for a 5-star frog splash. Styles gets the move because of the RVD taunt. It took too long, which like Taz points out on commentary, which was smart.
He does it like 3 different times. Takes too long doing the taunt thing.
Yeah. I literally wrote down, I zoned out for part of this match. It all felt very the same.
Yeah, it. If I didn't write down notes, I would have been so screwed. There's a nice little pinning cycle after he hits the Rolling Thunder where the knees get up, it was interesting. It was like there was a cradle, there was a roll through, there was a sunset flip pin, there was the pop-up sunset, I should say. There was a lot of stuff that looked really good in that pinning cycle, and honestly, that might have been the only real decent spot in the match.
Let's get right to the ending. There's a springboard 450 and nobody's home for Styles. Flair gets off commentary and comes back to ringside, even though he was tossed by Earl. As he does try to come back down to ringside, Black Machismo Jay Lethal shows up to confront Flair. I'm concerned by the lack of woos because nobody was wooing. Lethal low blows him, locks him in the figure four. While that happens, Styles crotches RVD on the top rope. And then RVD manages to guillotine him or like stun gun him when he comes up for a super.
Was it a stun gun? It kind of looked like a jawbreaker.
He kind of hit him in the throat, essentially.
It looked like a jawbreaker. It was also stun gun. It was really weird. It was a combination of a lot of different things. And, you know, good on AJ for making it work.
And then a 5-star frog splash with no taunt beforehand. Smart thinking. You've learned something. 3 count. This match wasn't fun. It was fun to make fun of Ric Flair.
It dragged on so long. This was all about Ric Flair, and that's the bad part. Why is a TNA world title about fucking Ric Flair?
Because right now, I think the storyline was Team Flair versus Team Hogan, right?
Yeah.
And we're not going to get deep into that. That wraps up all 5 of our matches. Javier, what did you think covering the career of RVD?
Don't watch RVD matches in a row. Like, honestly, RVD, looking at this, I was just thinking, you know, remember that rant I had earlier in this episode about Vince McMahon not pushing guys when they're super over? That doesn't fully apply to RVD. Because, like, honestly, I was just done at a certain point in time. Because, like, yeah, it's ironic me saying that because, you know, I'm a big John Cena mark, but at the same time, like, Cena had a fucking personality. Cena is very good on the mic. He could cut various different kinds of promos, and obviously he expanded himself as a wrestler as his career progressed. But RVD is the same guy now that he was 20 years ago. Same guy now that he was probably 30 years ago. You know, it's really weird because you don't really ever see a career like that where they are just the same person throughout, especially a guy who reached the level that he did, where the guy's a former WWE champion, and you telling me like there is no difference whatsoever at any point in his career?
There's literally no evolution of character. He's the same guy, and that's cool. But like, you need to evolve, right?
Yeah,
looking at some guys right now, we have seen distinctly 4 different versions of Seth Rollins. We have seen distinctly 3 different versions of Roman Reigns.
He's a fucking heel right now.
All improving upon the last, right?
Drew McIntyre was the top guy in that company for 2020. Yeah. And the difference between that and the Chosen One is night and day.
And 3MB? Like, tons of different growth opportunities and, like, challenging your character and making it develop over time. You can't just be the same. Daniel Bryan is a good example. He has grown so much in his WWE tenure and had like gone through so many different changes. RVD is
let's
the
just
same.
Think not even just that, like, let's just think of a guy who's comparable to RVD as far as positioning and you know, the way to realize and all that, and you get Kofi Kingston.
Yep.
Kofi has evolved like a mother. The guy came in with a Jamaican accent. Next thing you know, he's like the biggest draw of WrestleMania 35, short of fucking Ronda Rousey.
Yep. You're right. The best advice we have is don't watch all these matches in a row like we did.
And this always is a sour grapes RVD. RVD match. I love RVD.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. He's great at what he does. The educated feet, the man can kick. I was always an RVD mark as a kid. So like,
he's super bendy, super stretchy. There's no other wrestler like RVD. There just isn't. Like, a guy who's just, you know, basically has his whole gimmick basically around his flexibility and ability to just have the most unorthodox offense. There just isn't people. There aren't people like that in wrestling throughout any time period.
So kudos to RVD. He found the thing that worked and did it for 30 years. Oh, that is going to wrap up this week's podcast. Next week, we're going back to a tag team. We are covering the career of one Harlem Heat, Stevie Ray, and Booker T, specifically just the two of them. While they are a tag team, we're not looking at any of Booker T's single stuff. That will be its own separate episode. And I told you before we started recording this episode, we are going to get the match with the debut of the Shockmaster, because both Booker and Stevie Ray were involved.
Master! In
God, it's going to be fun to just see the Shockmaster in action. It was right before a War Games match, so we'll watch another War Games match. Always a fun time.
Always a fun time. And, you know, the best way to bookend Harlem Heat would just be, Hulk Hogan, we coming for you.
Nope. Nope. That's going to wrap up this week. Javier, where can people find you on social media?
I'm on the good old Twitter machine at JMLO Sports. Catch me on there. Drop a follow. Interact with me. I'm lonely. It's, you know, quarantine times out here. Mental health sucks. Acknowledge me.
Witness me. Follow me on Twitter at It's Evan Gomes, ItsEvanGomes. Follow my new podcast as well at Pop Capsule Pod. We talk about all the pop culture things from 10 and 20 years ago. It's a fun time. The episode that would have been released this week, we talk about Born This Way by Lady Gaga, Phil Collins retiring, the Teen Nick programming lineup, and Gilmore Girls. It's a fucking lineup.
It's a banger.
Me
and that Teen Nick one, let me tell you. We had we have some extensive knowledge on mine on that. Yeah. And I'm disappointed not to be brought on the podcast for that. But
that's, I mean, you're going to be on eventually.
Yeah, One Tree Hill is going to get on there eventually, and that's when Javier shines.
When One Tree Hill hits, that's your time to shine. Thank you all for listening, as always. And, of course, drop a follow wherever you want, and give a five-star Frog Splash review in honor of Rob Van Dam. That would be great. We'd love to see it.
And, again, acknowledge us. Remember, if you send us a tweet saying fuck Earl Hebner or just any sort of acknowledgement whatsoever in a positive capacity, we'll shout you out on this bad boy.
Yeah, we'll shout you out. We like to build up this community we're developing. Javier, any last words for the people?
Black Lives Matter, and keep fighting the good fight, everybody.